In case you've just joined us, we're talking about informers and agent provocateurs. We have spent part of the last half hour talking about that. May, as a research specialist, and having done so much research in this area, of course, almost all your work is involved in agent provocateurs and informers. You've come across quite a number of them. Is this type of thing more common at any point in American history? Did it exist in early American history, say back when the country was formed, or has it developed recently?
Well, the bulk of my research was on the murder of John Kennedy and how evidence was planted against Oswald, and Oswald did not shoot the president, and that involves provocateurs, people altering evidence, using his name and ordering a rifle that was in his name. And then after I began to realize that Oswald was an agent of the Navy intelligence and was not guilty of the crimes that he was blamed for doing, and provocateurs are people that create a situation like plant all these books of communism in his garage after he's dead, but nobody saw him reading them before because they want the Cold War to go on, or people in the State Department like Isaac Don Levine are working with Marina Oswald right after the assassination to give the Warren Commission a more communist plot to the motive of Lee Oswald when they know he's really Navy intelligence. And I began to study American history going back again to the Nazis and into the German period. And the most famous situation of provocateurs in current history is the Reichstag fire. And I was discussing it at home with my daughter, and the name was so familiar to me, and I didn't realize that she didn't know it. And I'll define it for the young listeners who were not old enough at the time or weren't born at the time Hitler came to power. He needed an excuse to clamp down all the people that objected to his policies. He was going into reducing the law system, altering the court of law, and taking away people to camps they weren't returning, concentration camps and tortures, and he was beginning a warfare state, arming Germany, getting ready to invade Poland and so forth. But when, in order to gain power and gain police, he had to tell the people that they had an enemy. And he told them the enemy was communism. And he had the chancellery, which was like our White House here, and that was called the Reichstag. And the Reichstag was burned. Hitler was having lunch away, not too far away, with all of his top men, and they got word the Reichstag had burned down. And it was the famous Reichstag fire. And that was the beginning of Hitler just rounding up everyone who opposed him. And he could put them in jail. He said, the communists did this. Now the communists have gone too far. They've destroyed these papers and these documents, and they've taken over our building, and this is too much. So he rounded up all these people and took them away, and I guess they were killed. And then later it turned out that the Reichstag was planned by Hitler, and almost everyone who helped plant the bombs to burn the building were killed. It was like people that worked in Egypt building the pyramids. It was very hard to find many people who were alive, because after they participated, they were killed. And the reason this agent that we just talked about, Lewis Tagwood, surfaced and decided after 10 years he wouldn't work for the L.A. Police Department anymore was that all of the radicals that he was to get interested in planting bombs in San Diego as the excuse to pick up the radicals, they would be killed too. He was to see that they were all killed. And he just decided this has gone far enough. And this is what happened in Germany. Now, the reason I mentioned that book in the beginning of the show, the Project Paperclip, is that the system in Germany of taking power and taking hold of the government that happened from World War I until Hitler came into power was brought into our system when the war was over. Reinhard Gehlen from German intelligence worked with our OSS and Alan Dulles, and they brought in the method of provocateurs. They taught our CIA, and Richard Helms was a man who worked in the black arts of intelligence. He's the head of our entire CIA now. His whole thing was the covert government, the hidden government. And that is to effect power through deaths of people, through dirty tricks. That was his first interest in love, was the dirty tricks department. He thought he'd be head of that right away, but another man was in line before him, so he had to wait his turn. And Richard Helms, the expert, Richard Helms was in Germany, spoke German, met Adolf Hitler, was very close to German intelligence, was a protege of Alan Dulles and the entire German intelligence system, and like covert governments and black operations, those in quotes, the black money, the dirty tricks. And dirty tricks are the provocateurs.
Well, what I think is important in trying to illustrate this is maybe to draw the conclusion that if these things can't happen in other countries, and in fact, leaders of these type of activities, agent provocateur type activities, if those leaders are brought over to the United States,
where they did it successfully,
theoretically, at least you can demonstrate that the possibility that these things could happen in the United States does exist, even if it was impossible to demonstrate that they have taken place, and you are doubted there. If you can document that the same people were
brought over here from there, and that these things did happen there, like you say, if you read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich or any book on Nazi history, I have about 20 books now on Nazi history, the rise of Germany. And as I go into my research, and I have all these books on State Department, as I say, and espionage, it's very important to study the rise of Germany, because the link between the rise of Germany and the presence of Richard Nixon is not just hit and miss. It's very closely associated. This is why there's so many Germans in Washington right now, Kissinger and Haldeman, and he's got a staff of about, I bet, 15 or 20 actual Germans who were involved. But the provocateurs that are behaving the way they are now as part of the federal government did behave that way in order to give Hitler the chance to be in power. In the paper this week, there was an article on the Berrigan trial, which is taking place, in addition to the Angela Davis trial. And they're being charged with the intent to kidnap Henry Kissinger. And the men were in jail for stealing draft records, draft cards. And while they were there, an informer was placed in the cell next to them, an agent provocateur. And now he's saying that these men were guilty of wanting to kidnap Henry Kissinger because of a conversation that was had in the cell.
Now, where did you get the word agent provocateur?
Well, you can look that up in the dictionary.
From the Berrigan paper? I'm looking at the article that you're holding in your hand, and I want you to...
San Jose Mercury, February 23rd.
The word agent provocateur is used in this AP story.
Oh, yes, this morning. And I have my file is agent provocateur, of all these things I've brought in. But it's used in the story in the San Jose Mercury that the agent provocateur was placed to frame Mr. Berrigan. I can give you a personal example. I don't want to get too far off the subject, but this is the way a system can work to hurt somebody. I've been on this show since June, and I received calls from a gentleman in Santa Cruz who was interested in my show, and he came down to see me, and he said he was a radical. He said he was a psychology professor and dropped out, and that he was a radical, and I had no reason to believe whether he was or wasn't. And he came to see me just before he left to go back east. He's working in a federal penitentiary. He showed me a work permit from Nixon's, they speed up unemployment jobs, at this period of time, and he's working in a federal penitentiary. And he came down to see me before he left, and he had a really heart-to-heart talk. And the subject goes like this: May, they've killed enough on our side, like King and Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Medgar Evers and Malcolm X. How about giving me a list? He says, I know people who they can take care of them, implying, like if I were to give a list of 40 people that I think should be killed to get the power back into somebody's hands. Now, my mind doesn't run that way. Even if I say men were involved in a political assassination, I wouldn't want them to have the death penalty. So he wanted to give me a list of something like Agnew or John Mitchell or Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, and he sort of sounded me out. And he split. He said, now my address is in Santa Cruz. He says, you write to me, and we can take care of them. He says, we'll take care of those people. Now, can you see me sitting down and sending a letter through a mail to a man working in a federal penitentiary of somebody in the government that I want killed? I'd be put in jail for the rest of my life. See, there's a provocateur if I ever saw one. He was setting the pace for me, like this guy, corresponding with me, calling me, coming to see me, and going off, and I write him a letter and give him, say, one name at a time, and in that letter, and then I would be held for wanting to murder these people, like the trial going on for Berrigan to get Henry Kissinger. See, honey, I wouldn't touch that kind of thing with a 10-foot pole, because my mind doesn't work that way in the first place. But that's a good trap to get into. That's a provocateur.
Well, you've talked so often about the Manson trial, the Angela Davis trial, the assassination of Martin Luther King, of Bobby Kennedy, of John Kennedy. And you bring up the theory that all these are related, and immediately there are those who say, oh, you've got to be kidding, somebody who's able to tie all these things together. The question I want to ask you, May, is... If you were trying to develop a certain political climate in the United States. Say you were in the government and you wanted a certain political climate to further your own political ambitions. It wouldn't serve, do you think, to have one isolated trial and pin your hopes on creating that climate out of one trial, that it would take a great deal of work in different parts of the country to demonstrate that the menace is everywhere, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think that the important thing is that you can go to any one of these trials. You can go to James Ray or to the Los Angeles Police Department with the Manson or the Robert Kennedy or the John Kennedy, and you take any one of those murders, and if the evidence is examined by legal minds and researchers, and if the witnesses are called who should have been called, you would come to the conclusion who planned all the murders. It doesn't matter which one we get to first. See, they're all designed by the same person. They parallels run through all the murders. The banking and the funds run through all the murders. The assassins are seen at the same man is photographed behind the Lorraine Motel, who's in Dealey Plaza. It is a question
wait,
of...
Wait a second.
Well, there's a photograph of a gentleman I can show you that was taken behind the Lorraine Motel, who is also photographed at Dealey Plaza, being taken off as a suspect by the police department. And he was never, the police had no other suspects. You see, there were men in the Dallas police area at the time of the John Kennedy murder who were dressed as policemen who weren't members of the police force. And they would walk off with men that looked like suspects, and then they'd all leave town. They were never members of the police force, and the men were never apprehended. They were just carried off. And they were photographed by other people on the street that day. Those are provocateurs, you see.
Why hasn't anybody heard about, for instance, the photograph of the man who's, was it?
Well, my...
Dealey Plaza and...
Well, the researchers talk about, like, there's a man named Vincent Salandria, an attorney in Pennsylvania, who spoke recently to the Women's International League for Peace, Will, and he gave a speech to them on the reason they... process of peace won't come about until you find out who killed John Kennedy. And that speech was published in Computer and Automation, and then because of my research, I see that, and then a little local newspaper here called The Nose carried articles of Vincent Salandria's speech. But it's a network thing through the media at this level. We can't get to the major news media. A man like Representative Talcott sits in my home, and I could show him all kinds of evidence. But he doesn't say in the hour that he's visiting me, show me one example of a conspiracy. He comes to me with a smart aleck sneer on his face with no intention of knowing the truth. This is why we... See, we're talking out, like Vincent Salandra's talking out. I'm talking out. Jojo Steen sends Newland's letters out of Europe. We're doing the best we can with what we've got. But there's no way to get to the representatives in Congress. They won't touch it. See, before Mr. Talcott comes to see me, he clears it with Gerald Ford, because I made some remark about Oswald being an agent of the FBI, and Mr. Ford knows it, and Representative Ford. And Mr. Talcott says, Mr. Ford, Gerald Ford doesn't agree with you at all. He knows Oswald did the killing, you know. And I said, well, I have a record of every meeting he went to the Warren Commission, which was about five, and every witness he heard testify, which was just a handful of people. And you can't tell me that I can spend 8 years with all this evidence and documentation that he knows as much as I do. But you take his word, because his word is the government word. If they say that's the way it happened, that's the way it's going to stand.
And the reaction to that statement?
Just nothing. He did not intend to have the evidence. Now, you talk about how far does a infiltration take place in our society if there is a conspiracy. Here's an example of a very quiet provocateur of a type. It's a simple thing which came out. A new magazine just came out last month called MS. That's the Woman's Lib magazine. And if you buy the magazine in the very beginning, you'll find that Elizabeth Forsling Harris is chairman of the board and treasurer of MS. She owns MS, finances the money. Gloria Steinem is the president and secretary, but Elizabeth Forsling Harris is chairman of the board of MS Magazine. Now, Penn Jones...
Chairwoman,
pardon me. Penn Jones, the same gentleman who wrote those three books on the political assassinations, Forgive My Grief, has a newspaper in Midlothian, Texas, outside of Dallas-Fort Worth area, and he knows everyone in that area very well. He keeps cross files on these particular people. And Penn Jones had an article in his paper just last week called Infiltrating Again. And he refers to MS Magazine publisher Elizabeth Forsling Harris. And he says the fact that Mrs. Harris accompanied Gloria Steinem, the liberation leader through Dallas. Now, I'm going to read what another researcher, Penn Jones, has to say about this. He said, since reading Coup d'etat by Luttwak, which is a book on the overthrow of governments, it is easier to understand the enormous planning and checking and double-checking necessary before the killing of John Kennedy. And Betty Forsling Harris was one of the high-level observers in Texas from Washington, and she left Dallas shortly after the assassination. And Elizabeth Forsling Harris worked for the Saul Bloom Advertising Agency. And she was referred to in Washington by their planners as their Dallas contact. Elizabeth Forsling Harris was a close worker with Jack Puterbaugh on the Dallas trip which cost the life of President Kennedy. Puterbaugh came to Washington from Minnesota with Orville Freeman, and he was associated with Billy Saul Estes. It was Puterbaugh who made the decision to hold the luncheon at Trademark because of the proximity to Love Field, and it was Puterbaugh who made the decision to take the unauthorized, unnecessary detour into Dealey Plaza. And Penn Jones is making the point that the decisions of the detour and the place to have lunch made Puterbaugh up to his hips in the assassination, and he and Betty Harris both worked at the Saul Bloom Agency and were never called as witnesses by the Warren Commission. Well, when I read Penn Jones' paper, I went to my documents that I've gotten from the National Archives of a letter by an attorney in the Warren Commission, Edward Conroy, to Lee Rankin, the chief attorney. And he said, why aren't we investigating the Saul Bloom Agency? He said that Oswald went to that Saul Bloom Agency during a 10-week period on 60 different days. He had assignment.
Who's saying this?
An attorney, Edward Conroy, and John O'Brien sent a letter in April 1964 to the head attorney of the Warren Commission saying, why haven't we ever looked into the Sam Bloom Agency? That Lee Harvey Oswald was at that agency 10 weeks. During a 10-week period, he had assignments there on 60 different days. Now, that agency where Betty Harris works decided the motorcade and the detour that John Kennedy was to take. Now, she takes over Women's Lib. I have another shocker for you that I'm going to do a show on of a provocateur in the state of California, someone well-known in the ecology field who's taken over the total ecology field. And the youth people are very hip to this person. They hang around him, and they think, like the Women's Lib think that Betty Harris or MS is a far-out magazine. I'm going to have a real shocker for you, but I have to do a little more research before we do a show on that. Now, I brought in some more agent provocateurs because Representative Talcott didn't know about Lewis Tackwood. I don't think he knows about a new provocateur who just surfaced this month in February, February the 10th. He's a Chicano, and his name is Eustacio Frank Martinez. And the article that I read about him said that for 2 years he worked as a police informer among Chicano activists in Texas and California. And a provocateur, he plants evidence against the Mexican-American leaders to get them arrested. He goes into the movements and tells them that their leaders aren't effective, and he takes over and breaks up the Brown Berets. He was in Houston and Kingsville, Texas. In protest march in Alice, Texas, he jumps on car, caved it in, and he sets up the purchase of guns for members of the local Mayo group. He burned a cross in the home of a Vista worker in Houston. He burned her house down. He was in a police lineup to create violence against the Mayo instructions. He says he crossed police line in an attempt to create violence so that there'd be violence against the Mayos. He purchased explosives for the Brown Beret. And then he blew his cover and had to go back to L.A. for a while, where he infiltrated the Chicano moratorium. He continually advocated the use of illegal weapons and violent tactics so that the L.A. Police Department would come down on the Latin American group.
Of course, to say that, may to have somebody come out and say he was an agent provocateur is fine. If it's true, it does make the police out to be the heavies, but again, somebody who is in constant trouble with the police could come out and, you know, somebody with a record could come out and make these statements and make himself out to be some type of hero or something like that to justify the fact that he's in trouble with the police a lot. Well, so how do you weed out the guys who are just looking for publicity, looking to see their name in the headlines, from the guy who really was working for a law enforcement agency and doing these type of things?
Well, the people who interviewed both Lewis Tackwood and Frank Martinez did check out where they had been, what happened. Like, for example, he said that he was sent at the time that Tunney was speaking to attack him and shut off the sound system. And he was sent by the police department. Well, they checked with Tunney, and he remembered it. He said his assistant, Mr. Thompson, was beaten, and that he remembered this incident very well. Well, at the time, you see, the provocateur is never arrested. He's let go to do something else. See, the man was involved in many crimes. Like, you check it out this way. If he went into police lines and does violence so that other people are arrested, they all get arrested. Then the provocateur is free to go on to do another thing. See, he never is held. He's let out to keep working, and that's one way to check if he's an agent. Now,
well, couldn't he simply know of these incidents and not actually be the one who participated?
No, but if he's actually participating and he's never arrested, that's one clue that he works for the police department.
All right, so if you can establish that he actually was there and did this thing, has that been established in the case of
this
Chicano?
In each of these claims and each of the Tackwood claims, it has been established. Like he said, I was up at Berkeley as representing the LA Police Department. They checked the motel where he stayed. They checked the men that he was with, that he was an intelligent agent. The men that he was following around, they checked out what he was doing, you see. All of these charges are not, this is the importance of the thing, is that they're not just wild charges. They can be checked out. If Tackwood said, I gave information for the police as a state's witness, they want a conviction and send a man to death row. The thing that Evel Younger should do and Ronald Reagan should do is to get that case and open it up and see what the testimony was that sent the man to death row. And either say Tackwood's crazy, or we'll get the man off death row that the L.A. Police Department, you see, the heads of our state, Richard, I want to say Richard Nixon, but he's over the whole country, Evel Younger, the Attorney General, is larger than the Los Angeles Police Department. And if Lewis Tackwood makes 20 allegations and one of them is correct, then that should be adjusted to find out if he's crazy. But because they won't go into any of them, they just call him a Bolshevik, gives you an example of how they want to avoid opening up the case, if it's true. And he names the men who knew ahead of time about the Marin shootout, if it was all staged and planned by the federal government or the state government. Angela Davis's trial should be called off. I didn't know why, after the Tackwood thing came out, why her attorneys or the Soledad attorneys just didn't end the case right there until they found out whether Tackwood was right or not. I haven't seen a statement from their attorneys. I don't think they know any more than Bert Talcott knows. See, if I were representing Angela Davis or the two boys in the Soledad case, or representing the deceased Jackson brothers, you know, in some form, I would want to know right there whether the case proceeds. Because if it was planned by the Los Angeles Police Department, then the trials up north are a mockery. They're just a false perversion of justice like happened in Nazi Germany again in the courts, where the guilty were made to look innocent and the innocent were made to look guilty. And as long as nobody goes into the allegation of Martinez, and he seems to be knowledgeable, what he's saying now is that he is saying, in quotes, it does not pay to be an informer because when they no longer need you, they frame you, end quotes. And he goes in again like the Tunney incident, and he has a tape recording, he said, of the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department who participated in raids on the Chicano moratorium. And he tells of his work in these particular bureaus and the mischief that he was into. And there was a trial of Los Tres that will be reopened. He said someday that he turned an informer and sent three people to jail. Juan, Rodolfo, and Alberto, he said, three men were sent to prison. And they were found guilty. One's in prison for 40 years, another for 25 years, and another for 10 years. And he claims that this was completely contrived by the police department, that he planted false evidence on these men. Well, these cases should be reopened. He said now he wants a congressional investigation of how the FBI, the Federal Narcotics Bureau, the LA Police Department, the ATF, and the Special Force Unit of the California Department of Corrections cooperate in attempting political repression of dissident groups. Martinez said, this is what I have been asking for, and he surfaced, you know, I've been talking about this for many years now, and he surfaced just this February and said that Congress and the state have to go into how he's demanding a congressional investigation of the interagency workings of the intelligence operative agencies in California and reopening the case called Los Tres. Now, this man was involved in these things. He sent them to jail. Tackwood was involved. And they want the truth told now. And it's up to the people, the listeners who are listening to us today, to begin to think about how do you appeal. You can appeal to Evel Younger or Bert Talcott or...
You can or can't?
You can't. I don't know, Ronald Reagan. How are you going to get some sense into this thing? I think we'll have to find some lawyers similar to the men that are representing the Soledad group, some sincere lawyers who, if there are any, who take one of the charges of Tacwood or Martinez and go into it and find out what is really happening. And if the evidence is destroyed or altered, go into another case and find out. If they just take the charges that these two men have made, I say it would end up right at the White House with the political assassination. It's a part of the same structure moving on down to your state level. I've always considered it that, and I consider the Soledad case and the Angela Davis just a branch of a total repression. And then we'll move into electronic surveillance and lobotomies and removal of the radicals, or anybody who says the system is oppressive, like in Nazi Germany, will be isolated or removed. But these men have screamed out, they've risked their lives, and it's a question of how long people are going to be kept back from knowing more about them. They don't get much coverage in the news media. They got the L.A. Times interviews, but there's nothing up here about them.
I mean, it would be interesting if you could find any instance where the government has admitted using these types of tactics. Do you know of any such incidents?
Well, there was a conference. I have 30 articles here we can't even read today of government agents admitting that they worked for the FBI and they planted evidence to start riots and so forth. There was a conference in Princeton this last summer on J. Edgar Hoover and his oppressive tactics, and agents of the FBI spoke up. One agent who planted a bomb at a bridge in Seattle and then killed the person who planted the bomb, you know, hired that. There are people. Here's an article of a man in Houston, Texas. A Texas official of the Office of Economic Opportunity said today that a poverty worker accused of inciting Negroes to riot in Houston was an undercover agent of the city. Walter H. Richter, Southwest Regional Director of OEO, said that the man was named Carl Moore, and he told Senate investigators Thursday that Moore tried to inflame Negroes into a gathering at Houston street corner. Several times when we were inclined to question his activities, he said they were the doings of undercover work for the Community Action Agency and the mayor's office. This is in Houston, Texas. You know, it's a too bad we can't. You know, I always cry because we don't have more time to go into each individual case. You know, we wander around, but the wandering is related, too. You know what I mean?
Okay, and that article it was an AP wire story printed in the Monterey Peninsula Herald for those who think that all your research is based on the Berkeley Barb or something. It's not.
Yeah, this came out of your Herald, and this was at the time after Martin Luther King was killed, and that goes into James Ray saying that we have to, Martin Luther King had to be killed in an election year, and an election year brought riots, and riots brought Spiro Agnew, because he was unknown till then he clamped down on the blacks, Rap Brown and Carmichael, and I claim that Agnew was selected long before King was killed, that they had in mind that he would be the vice president. So here's an agent working with the mayor and the community council, and he's supposed to get Negroes worked up and into a riot state. That is the definition of a provocateur, if I ever saw one.
May, what have we talked about today, in summary, if you can do that? What conclusions could a listener who has followed the show through this hour, what conclusions can they make?
Well, I would hope they would come to the conclusion that the people that effected a total state of fascism in Nazi Germany moved into this country and are in high places in power in Washington today, and that Nazis from the former German government were involved in political assassinations in our of our public officials, the main killing of our presidents and civil rights leaders. But then the political assassinations aren't enough to change those leaders. You go way down into the mainstream, and people who recognize the police getting off with these murders or the oppressive tactics of a police state, they see that the person who is jumping the car, the provocateur who's starting the riot, isn't apprehended. And if you scream up and say, no, that man was shot in cold blood, it wasn't self-defense, you're taken off as a radical. And if they want evidence on you to lock you up, they plant evidence. That people are affecting the thinking of America, that we're in a state of chaos or anarchy, that we need police, we need those tax squads like the Soledad trial you were talking about on the air this week. People think we need those super agents with their sticks and mace and weapons because we have other persons who are paid agents in our society making all the noise, doing the shooting, staging the shootouts. And then that gives an excuse for more tighter policemen and surveillance on the people.
Okay, quite an interesting hour. You've been, of course, listening to Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel. I'm Phil Kogan. I hope you have had your eyebrows raised a little bit. We always invite your comments and questions. You may write to Dialogue Assassination.